Ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Hello, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus version of Dialogue. I'm Terry D. Kester, and it's good to be with you tonight, and here with me is...
Garland Nixon.
And Mark Levine.
Oh, you poor people, you're in for it tonight, I'll tell you. Okay, Garland and Mark, it's great to see you, and great to be with you again. And we're going to hit some heavy stuff this afternoon, or this evening. You know, it's in keeping with the nice weather, the code orange weather that we're trying to breathe out there. And I want to take you motorcycling through that stuff. It's thick. I'll tell you. But anyway.
Is that a Homeland Security code orange or, you know,
just it's a little bit of both. Yeah, okay. A little bit of both. You know, it's toxic no matter what you do, you know. Okay, the premise of tonight's show is you're screwed.
That's the premise of all your shows, Terry. Yeah, what's the difference in that and every other show you do?
Well, this is a different way.
I know, but you know.
Yeah, same principle.
Every show is we're screwed. We're going to die by global warming. We're going to die by Wall Street. Yeah, We're going to die.
No, nothing to do with dying. You're going to go broke.
Okay, this time. That's better.
So the question tonight to Terry is, how are we screwed this week?
Okay, well, the point is, in case you haven't read it, and I trust you have, and I hope you have, and, you know, the American dream is to accumulate a little bit of wealth, maybe. American dream is to be able to progress financially a little bit. And
have a picket fence, 2.3
children. Have a picket fence, 2.3 children, and a dollar and a half or a $1.380 in the bank. And to be able to save some money. Now, we know Americans have a lousy savings rate to begin with. But, you know, people have got 401ks or should have 401ks, et cetera. And so there are supposedly ways to save. And no matter what you save or no matter how you save, you usually wind up in the market one way or the other, whether you're doing commodities, whether you're doing bonds, whether you're doing city bonds, whether you're doing stocks, whatever, gold or anything else. You basically are winding up in the market.
Or your pension funds, whatever.
Whatever it is. You
wind up involuntarily at times.
You can put in real estate.
Yeah. And again, but you're still doing it in a fund for the most part, you know. And so the question, in fact, I've got, you know, here in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers, you know, one thing, a full-page ad that I just saw in the Washington Post Saturday, actually, was, you know, that how to get your free armored safe. Because the only
Great.
Way, the point is, the only way that you're going to have any wealth or any money at all is to put it in a big armored safe in your house, not in your mattress, and not invest it anywhere. So if you want to look in the Saturday paper, you can get a free armored safe there just by, you know, buying some of their minted coins, et cetera. So the question really is, guys, I give you $1.380, and where the heck do you invest it? What do you do with it? I mean, it is a real question today for people. Now, it's not just the economy that is the problem, and it's not just the descending. What's happening that has got me on this topic tonight is that the hedge funds and the derivative market and the big boys have already developed whole new techniques and whole new patterns of investing and extended those to an extreme point, even before we've even seen any really glimpse of recovery. I mean, yes, it's slowed down a little bit in terms of the growth. It's slowed down a little bit in terms of its descending. It's still descending. Let's make sure that's clear. It's still, 1% down, I think, this quarter. There's a beautiful article. Well, beautiful may not be the right word, but it's kind of frightening article, actually.
Beautiful to you. You love frightening articles.
Yeah, well, I'm dealing
with... Can we just call you Cassandra? Is that okay?
don't you find it interesting that he found he sees
a
frightening article?
That's right.
Well,
he's
horrifying us. But to Terry,
reality. I'm big on reality, guys. What can I tell you? I mean, you guys, you know, can live in that fantasy land if you want. And I bet you go to Disneyland yearly and ride around those little teacups.
And you spend your whole time in a haunted house.
Damn right.
No, he's not. He's in his bunker hiding.
Okay. I can't afford a bunker. Are you kidding? Jeez.
You can live in that armored safe.
Yeah, I'm digging a hole already, but, you know, anyway. This is Stephen Pearlstein. This is not me, and I just read this out of interest, and it blows the mind. Even, and I'm reading, quoting from Stephen Pearlstein, Friday's Washington Post, last Friday's Washington Post. Even as the cleanup crew is carting away the debris left by the last financial crisis, I like how we refer to that already, the last financial crisis, the investment banks, hedge funds, and exchanges are busy working on the next financial crisis. Forget collateralization, debt obligations, and credit default swaps. The new thing is high-frequency trading. In the last 3 years, this practice has boosted trading on the country's stock exchange by more than 150% in the last 3 years, to the point where it now accounts for two-thirds of the daily trading volume. That is an incredible amount. With high-frequency trading, high-speed computers programmed with proprietary software, which is a nice word to mean secret software, based on complex algorithms.
Algorithms.
That's
thank
easy
you.
For you to say.
Yeah, I used to know what those were back many years ago. Spew out a constant stream of orders to buy and sell literally millions of shares of stocks and other securities, hoping to make a penny, even a penny, on each trade.
Hey, a penny times $1 million, that's a lot of bucks.
That's a lot of money.
Particularly a day.
Or an hour. It's much quicker than that. Right. That's the point.
$50,000 a day, that's not a bad salary.
Yeah, although the high-frequency traders employ any number of different strategies, what's common to virtually all of them, the shares that they are buying, trading, are usually held for only minutes or even seconds. Because it thrives on volatility, high-frequency trading has generated hefty profits over the past 2 years for hedge funds and proprietary trading desks, and hefty bonuses, of course, for those who oversee it and collect the fees. What's different now is the speed, the sophistication of the algorithms, and the volume of trading. Huge volume of trading at this point. And for some, on exchange, and all, more than this, on some exchanges, the exchanges are actually paying fees to these guys in terms of the volume of trading. So they are literally trading billions of shares or millions of shares every single minute, every single second, strictly driven by a computer. What it does is create a permanent volatile market, and a market impossible for the average investor or even the average hedge fund to have any idea of what's really going on, because it's not based at all on any reality in terms of corporate profit, in terms of corporate development, in terms of innovation or anything else. It's just based on volatility by the second. And this high-frequency trading, as Stephen Perlstein suggests here, is going to lead us – it's so wildly speculative, it'll lead us almost – very short time to the next crash is what he is saying and what he's proposing. But my real question is, everybody out there is trying to get ahead a little bit, even though, you know, wages haven't improved for the average person since, what, 1979, something like that. Everybody's trying to invest to do a little bit. You know, if I give you guys $1.380, if I give any of our listeners $1.380, where the heck do you put it? What do you do?
That's easy.
Yes?
I'm putting mine in armored safes.
Putting it where?
Armored safes.
I'm putting it in the armored safe market.
Okay. You're going for the investing in those hedge funds that the people that are making millions. You know, but you can't. Put it in Goldman Sachs. They're stealing people blind. I might as well get a piece of it, right?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this, too, because what does the government do right now? They're in it, you know, they're facing kind of an interesting kind of paradoxical situation with people, because the main problem was people weren't saving money. They're spending everything. They're going in debt. And so we find ourselves in a very difficult position. However, the way to get out of it is for people to spend money. So they have to convince people, well, you were screwing up because nobody saved any money. So what do you want us to do? Well, right now, don't save money. We want you to spend money. And then after we get back on our feet, save money. So it's a really odd situation whether the government would even tell people to save their money.
The whole situation is odd. Well, it's being driven, you know, by forces that the average person and regulation, of course, has no control over yet at this point, and it isn't doing a thing, particularly in terms of this new high-speed, high-frequency trading. And you said, like, you know, Mark, you said, like, invest in Goldman Sachs. Fine, well, and good. You have no idea how that is going to be manipulated, because with this volume, even something as solid, what seems as solid as Goldman Sachs.
I don't think it's solid. I think they're a bunch of thieves. Well, I'm just saying I want a piece of the thievery. Well, but they're not, because they're frankly harming their own shareholders by taking these massive bonuses, which is true throughout corporations. But I don't know, Terry, whenever I hear you say something like this.
Steve Perlstein, but I'm just asking the question.
No, you remind me of the police officer in Casablanca who was shocked to find out the gambling was going on in the gambling establishment. All right? This is not new. Wall Street using arbitrage is not new. The fact that they're using more and more sophisticated computer models is not new. They're always going to look for any loophole in the system to make a buck.
You're wrong. The speed...
Yeah, but, the speed is new.
They're just getting better at it.
Yeah, they're just getting better at it. They're just better
thieves. But it's not, that's the point. It's not a question. I mean, this is, again, I'm quoting Steve Irwin. What's different now is the speed, the sophistication,
right,
and the volume of trading.
Right, they're gambling faster.
They're gambling faster. And okay. And it does not allow you or anybody else to analyze the market unless somehow you're part of one of these hedge funds or something else. And no, you can't invest in a hedge fund. I mean, unless you have some very, very, very powerful
but
friends.
But here's the thing, Terry. What the Wall Street people are doing is they're basically doing arbitrage. What they're saying yep. is, okay, in the Japanese market, GE stock is selling a penny higher than it is in the American market. We'll buy, you know, a million shares in the American market till the price ticks up mm-hmm. a penny, and then we'll sell it. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So they're making profits that I agree with you and I can't make. I fully agree with you there. But where I disagree with you is the notion that they're somehow, you know, wildly changing the price of stocks. What they're really doing is they're saying, okay, we see a 2 cent to profit times a million, so it's a huge amount of money, and we're closing that gap. It makes them very rich, but I guess where I don't agree with you is the idea that it somehow changes whether or not the price reflects the stock. I think
it
what
does.
They're doing
it
is
does.
Looking for the holes and making them smaller.
You're partially right, but you mentioned it before. What it is it's the volume, not just the volatility, it's the volume. We're not talking about adjusting a few hundred.
No, I agree
shares.
They're making huge profits.
We're talking about billions. No, but that's the volatility. We're talking about billions
Why
of shares.
Why does it create volatility?
Because it's just constantly changing. It's totally unpredictable.
That doesn't mean it's volatile. Well, it doesn't
yes.
create price
and
volatility. It creates share volatility.
And it's totally speculative.
Well, let me add this also. The other issue to kind of go halfway between the two of you gentlemen.
Thank you, Garland. That's why we love
Garland.
You. We love you, Garland. Don't
He's
go
the
away.
Reasonable guy in the
Don't room. Go away, Garland, whatever you do, because Mark and I are going to
keep you guys apart. But realistically, yes, in a way you're both right, because since they've recently started doing this, we really don't know the long-term effects. So
this has been happening before. It's just happening faster and more sophisticated.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. We don't know. We know that it was happening. However, increasing it, being able to do it at the volume that they're doing, we really don't know. You know how the market is. You really don't know when things shift and change a little bit. It takes a while for it to catch up. It's possible that doing what they were doing this at a lower level doesn't affect the market. But when you pump it up to massive levels, let's face it, it has to do something. Whether it could be good. I'm not saying
it's not
good.
I say take it and tax it and use the money to help us with stimulus or to cut down the deficit. I don't think they're doing it per se. And this is where Terry and I may well disagree. I don't think they're doing it per se is wrong. What offends me is they're making massive profits that we can't make. So I say when people are making windfall profits, slap an 80% tax on it. They'll still make trillions of dollars from their 20%, and we'll get a bunch of money in the government that'll be great from rich people who can afford to lose it. I'd rather, you know, cash in on what they're doing than stop it.
Yeah, I mean, somehow we've got to get involved as the people. There's no question about it. That's
so
part
an 80-90% tax? And
yeah,
and give the 10-20% because they need to do something, you know.
Yeah. But in reality, it's highly unlikely we're going to get anything like that through.
Well,
as always, it comes
down to Congress. See?
Yes.
They'll never get
and
that
there's
through.
There's the problem. Yeah, raise the taxes on the rich. That's really going to work well. It's just not happening. But the real question I have is whether you want to debate what's happening on the stock market or not. That's not my debate. That's not my concern. My concern is what the average person does. What can the average person do to protect themselves? Now, you guys are relatively young. And I'm older and wiser. Well, older anyway.
You are. Oh, I will concede that you're
thank
older.
You, thank
you're
you,
half right.
Thank you. Okay. But, you know, if you are a senior citizen, say, or if you are on a fixed income, I mean, this is crucial.
It's a problem.
Because, you know, there's no way to hold on to your money. There's no way to keep up with inflation when it starts because you can't play the game. You can't really do. I'm all in favor of, you know, the first stock I bought, Lord forgive me, years ago, was a little bit of Exxon. Why? Simply because I knew I couldn't overthrow Exxon, and it was not going to disappear. I went in Rome, do as the Romans.
So this guy's responsible for global warming, is he, Mark?
It's all your fault, Terry. What a hypocrite. Here, I thought you were a liberal, a progressive. This guy owns oil companies.
Right now, big oil.
He's
right
making
here.
All
big
this
oil.
Money.
I
all right,
it.
So you're a secret spy for Dick Cheney, aren't you, Terry?
I knew I couldn't tell you guys.
I don't know. Do they allow people in Pacifica that have stock in Exxon? I don't know, Terry.
Two shares. You know, two shares.
But when it first started, they're worth like $200 million now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You haven't been following the market.
No, look, see, I don't...
But the point is, what's happened, you know, like for those of us who are, you know, older and wiser, I mean, you know, we're really in a bad situation. And the average American citizen is. Your funds, your stocks right now are not in a position where you're going to be able to participate effectively, even if the market does start to rise.
Well, I disagree
So the question is, where does the average person go to make economic progress?
But you listen to whatever Jim Cramer says on Mad Money, and you do the opposite.
Yeah, right.
Well, and I all right, say, I mean, that's an easy investing tip for everybody.
Yeah. I would say this, Terry. Realistically, I think that people were already in this position, and they just found out recently. People felt, hey, I can put money in the market, and over the long term, I'll make money. They put money in the market, and what happened here in the last year?
Yeah.
They lost a lot of you and I kind of people, and a lot of seniors, and a lot of people who felt the market was stable. They put this money in. They thought, hey, this is okay, and they got beat, and they lost every dime they had. So now,
it is silly for seniors to put money in the market. Just put it in a CD, let it earn the 1 or 2%. But for young people, I think it's still true. And this we sound like a financial show, but I still think it's true that in the very long run, 10, 20, 30 years, you put money in the market, and you're going to make money. Understanding that, yeah, in any given year or two or three, you could be wiped out. I mean, that's just the way it works.
That's the sales technique that we've all given.
Right,
you know,
right.
But
you should always have safe funds. And,
okay.
And I want to just agree that there are many, many regulations, and I want to talk about in this hour, that I think Congress can do to make the market fairer. I don't want to abolish the stock market, but there are a bunch of things they can do. One of the things they can do to stop what you're talking about, Terry, I like taxing it. But another option would be simply to say every stock you own, you got to own for 24 hours. Boom. There it goes. You know, or even just 1 hour probably would be fine. It would end the practice you're talking about. Another thing that I know is going through the hill right now, and this is my old boss, Barney Frank. So I'll put my bias right there on the front, is a bill, and it's so tame. It's so timid. It's amazing to me that it may well not pass. The bill is merely to give shareholders an advisory say salaries of the directors, board of directors. This bill probably won't pass because Wall Street doesn't want shareholders to have a vote on whether to give a non-binding resolution on whether people are paid too much. To me, it should go further. Shareholders are supposed to be owners of the corporations. They should determine the salaries. Period.
Well, this is exactly an example of what's happening. I mean, one of the more classic examples right now is this thing with Bank of America that, you know, had to bought Merrill Lynch. And I don't know if you've checked the papers today, but one of the more fascinating things is that when they bought that, and they bought it for $50 billion, Bank of America said to its investors, its shareholders, its general public, even though they were teetering a bit too, Merrill Lynch was teetering to the point of collapse, we will not allow, or Merrill Lynch will not give out any bonuses without our consent, without Bank of America's consent, that we will restrain the bonuses, was the implication. It turns out it was an absolute lie. It turns out they've taken $45 billion in TARP funds, plus all the Fed funds, and they already started dedicating money to the tune of $5.8 billion bonuses prior to the acquisition. Now, that not only is it against the law, I mean, the real point of what I'm trying to say here is we're dealing with criminals.
Of course we are.
Yeah. And there's no accountability for them. And they're not just lame criminals. I mean, I'd rather have the mafia around
passing booze.
No, they're
very sophisticated criminals, and they steal a lot of money.
But look, not only do they have a lot of money, they are controlling an awful lot of the lobby effort.
Of course they are. An awful lot
of the financial things. So we're not getting fined. You know, Congress, Barney Frank, that's nice. Good try, Barney. Lots of luck. You know. But here's the thing.
When AIG, when those executives took all those bonuses, there was a huge uproar in America.
Yep.
Congress, even Republicans, believe it or not, acted. And by an overwhelming majority, 2/3 in the House at least, they voted to put a 90% surtax on those bonuses. And then everyone, including, I'm sorry to say, the Obama administration said, oh, no, that's excessive. I didn't think that was excessive at all. I liked that bill. I wanted to see that bill become law. It's exactly because of populist anger from radio shows. And I got to tell you, tell you, this isn't even a left-right issue. This is an America's us versus them issue. There are people on the right that are just as angry about this as people on the left.
And, but you're pointing out one of the real sad things, too, and that is, frankly, I mean, like that whole 90% thing on executive compensation. That's showboating. I mean, they know damn well they're not going to pass it. That's just showboating, make a lot of noise.
And frankly, the administration was knocking it. I disagree with the administration.
We're going to get some callers in here a bit because we need an answer to these questions. One, you know, how do we get our government to do anything if it can? And two, if you want to save a dollar and a half, you know, if you want to invest, if you want to protect your future, where the heck do you go today, Garland? Oh, by the way, number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We'll open the phone lines here in just a bit. Garland.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is you're calling them criminals. That's the problem. All too often, they're not criminals.
Yeah, it's legal.
Because starting good old Daddy Reagan came in, and unfortunately, there was people on all sides of the fence that jumped in for about 20 years, and they stripped away all of the provisions that would make them criminals. So what we're saying is this thing is unethical, and they're doing immoral things. But let me ask you, the question again comes back. If I take away a law that allows you to do something, are you any more unethical than me? Are they any more unethical and immoral than the people who took the laws away? They're operating in an environment that there are no restrictions. They can do what they want. There were restrictions, but they were removed. So I always go back to the argument that corporate leaders and people in the corporate world are going to do whatever the environment allows them to do. They must be restricted. Corporations by nature are amoral. And if you give them the opportunity to take all this money and take you to the cleaners, they're going to do it. There's a responsibility of our government, of our Congress, of our executive branch, is to create an environment where they can't do that. The problem is we didn't do it.
That's why I always bring it back to public financing. It's always the problem is corporations giving money to politicians, putting politicians in your pocket. Frankly, it used to cost $500,000 to buy a politician today. Today, you can stick, you get three for $100,000?
I mean,
go. You get them in the little drive-through windows. I'll take one congressman, two senators. We got to get money out of politics. That's how they do it in Europe. And that's the thing that everyone says, oh, no, you can't possibly
freedom of speech.
That.
Freedom of speech. Read George Will. That's freedom of speech.
I don't believe corporations have freedom of speech. And if you haven't heard it here, you've heard it here first. Because I don't believe constitutions are persons. Constitution.
But you're leaving out that Supreme Court decision. I forget the name of it, but I've got
to appoint me to Supreme Court because I got to change that decision. Buckley v. Valeo is
the Supreme Court decision.
Was it 1890
ways back, that the corporations are citizens and have the same rights as citizens. And that's incredible because.
That's BS. Well, it's the opinion.
Not only is it BS, but it's also worse than that because. The corporate citizen has rights that the average citizen couldn't begin to get.
They can afford to buy politicians.
Right.
You got to be, you know, George Soros or Ron or Ross Perot to buy a politician, as an individual.
And maybe if we can't get, corporate financing out of the elections, we should get all of the progressive and liberal organizations together, and they should walk up to Capitol Hill with bags of money and just say, look, we're going to be open about this.
Pour it at their feet. Just a bunch of gold.
Here's a couple $1 million from our side.
Well, you got to get back to the first part, which unfortunately is not a reality. If we could just get all of the progressive and liberal organizations together, it's like herding cats at the time. They're so busy fighting amongst each other that they don't even realize
they're
on the same side.
Three progressives have seven opinions.
You know what part of the problem
including the three of us.
I think, I've been thinking about this a lot and how you motivate people and how you get people involved, and hopefully we'll get some callers in here to get some involved. 202-588-0893. Part of the problem is I think a lot of us have gotten to the point of mistaking talk shows for activism.
That's true. People call in and they think they've done what they need to do
rather than
calling a member of Congress. I mean, we love when you call in here.
Yes, don't misunderstand.
You know what? Let's give the number of the Capitol switchboard. 202-225-3121. I've memorized it. If you haven't, I'm not going to call you a bad citizen on air. I'll just think it off air. No, know this number. You should
say it again.
202-225-3121. It's not hard to remember.
225-3121.
And the problem, of course, is people in D.C. have no representation. But you know what? Call Eleanor Holmes Norton and at least get her to sign on. She has power to convince some others.
But, this is a 50,000-watt station. We're in lots of places.
Americans who have real rights to vote, unlike the occupied territory.
We're American citizens who have real, representation.
Well, we're kind of stuck. We haven't got an answer, guys.
Well, the answer is through the law, as always. The answer is through lobbying Congress, lobbying the administration. I'm disappointed the Obama administration, frankly, backed down.
Whoa. I don't believe I heard that from Mark Levine.
I never claimed they were perfect.
Did I not say this weeks ago, Garland? Did I not express profound disappointment?
And do I have to really add the it's only been 6 months part or seven months almost now?
I'm mostly
gotta add
happy always. With them, but I'm disappointed that I think they have failed to crack down as hard as they could. And really, a lot of it's Congress. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of times when we're disappointed in government, it's really the fault in a democracy, you know, lies with ourselves. If we're not calling our members of Congress, then we're all partly to blame.
Yeah, they do react. You know, a lot of people don't realize this. Use emails, faxes, phone calls. They really do react to this stuff. And as you said, most people, they don't do it. And then they complain because they don't.
You know, a phone call doesn't take much time. It really doesn't. I call my member of Congress all the time. And you wouldn't know it from our switchboards right now. Well, they're busy calling Congress.
What more can we ask?
But it's really easy. You just say, I want to talk about a certain issue. They won't. They don't usually put you with the congressman or the senator.
But you talk with the staffer,
and they ask where you're from, and they get your name and address. Don't be afraid to do that.
Don't say D.C.
And
then you're on the list, you know, and Dick Cheney will get you in the night.
No. Terry, you're harming democracy. Don't even joke about that. Somebody might believe you.
We have people out there that really believe that stuff.
I mean, we have birthers out there. Yeah, right, Terry? Yeah, don't spread nonsense.
Sorry, okay. It may not be Dick Cheney. It may be just the CIA.
Even if you live in D.C., and you can call Elders Holmes Norton. She does have a vote on committee. The Democrats allow that. That's the most they can do. But even working for D.C.
You can also call the White House. I mean, they have to do have a line, you know. And I mean, but
there's a reason why Congress did that 90% tax, because people were very angry in calling, and there's a reason why they backed off. You know why? Because people stopped calling.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Phillips pointed out today on another show that you may have heard that actually, just so people understand, one of the highest periods of growth and essentially one of the boom periods of the United States was under the Eisenhower administration after World War II. And the whole world was destroyed,
and behold, we were the sole one standing.
Right. Right. Yeah. But however it happened. But at any rate, the tax rate then was 90% to 91%
on the top rich.
Yeah. And I mean, since then, it's just been deteriorating ever since. And it's no longer the least bit progressive. And It's the least bit progressive. Yeah, Reagan.
The very least.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, you know, Americans have been convinced that somehow their taxes are bad, you know, which is absurd. I mean, taxes are what provide your services, be it your schools, be it your fire department,
be it your
potholes.
Government waste is bad. We can all agree on that.
Yeah, but taxes, that's not taxes.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. People need to make the distinction between government spending money on wasteful things. You know, they don't help us at all, you know, spending a huge amount of money, you know, building bridges in Iraq that we later blow up. You know, that's a problem.
But again, that was the rhetoric that mostly started in recent times with the Reagan administration. You know, it was the rhetoric.
The welfare queen, and you know, government is not the solution. Government is the problem, right, which is absurd.
Well, when he was president, I would agree with that.
No, it depends on the government. Can't we be a little more sophisticated here? Some government programs work very well. I'll give you an example. The Cash for Clunkers program.
Oh man,
it's working really well. The idea that you can turn in your old car and buy a new fuel efficient one, and the government gives you some money, and it's helping the auto industry. And you know, this is something that's really stimulating the economy, and we are stimulating, Terry. If you look at the figures, the same figures you're
right
looking
here
at.
In my
no. Glass half full or half empty. What do we see? We see that the economic activity declined 6% in the last quarter under George Bush, 6% in the first quarter, which was still, you know, leading up, and already in the second quarter of Obama, just April to June, we're only declining 1%. That is a huge increase, if you will. It's not an increased activity,
but it's better.
It's much better, and it shows that we're doing fine. The surplus is taking us out. And one of the main things that isn't, as Garland pointed out, actually is consumer spending. And so, yeah. When middle-class people spend and have money to spend, that stimulates the economy. Now, when the rich have money to spend, you know, they already own their gold-plated toilet seats.
But the middle class ain't going to have the money and hasn't got the money now, and so they can only do one thing to get the money. And that's one of the things, again, I'm giving Kevin Phillips a lot of credit today, but he pointed out the growth of the last 15 years prior to the crash was strictly based on debt.
That's true.
Right.
And, so you have to increase real wages.
Yeah. And something, you know, a term that does, we've got to go to PSA in a second, but a term that doesn't get used much, and it's something that we need to really get to, and President Obama, I heard him say it a little bit, but not really get into it that much, and that is this. For many years, we've been running this bubble bust economy, where we have a bubble for X amount of years, and then it busts, and then we go in the recession. And this is a very clear cycle that happens over and over and over again. What we
it's
need
almost
to
built
do,
in.
Yeah. So what
it's
we
natural
need,
economic
right,
cycle.
But so what we need to do is change the nature of economics so it's not a natural economic cycle so we can get it.
I don't think we'll get rid of the business cycle. I just want to increase real wages. That'll do it.
Yeah, okay. We're going to have to take a break here. This is Terry D. Kester trying to contend with Garland, Nixon, and Mark Levine. And slowly but surely, they are learning, and I'm proud of them. I am proud of them. I am really proud
now
of
I'm
them.
Worried.
Okay, Nick, hang on. We got to take a break here at the top, the bottom of the hour. This is Dialogue. This is WPFW 89.3 FM. We'll be back with you and Nick on the line in just a moment.
WPFW has a brand new program, From the Vault, From the Community, which airs every Wednesday at 3 p.m., will add a new face starting August 5th. Every first Wednesday of the month, a round table of women will gather together for a frank and lively discussion of issues facing women. From the unique perspective of four women who have shaped their lives through work, raising children, and playing all the roles that women play in relationships, A Woman's Wealth will delve into every personal and sometimes taboo topic of feminine hygiene, sex, relationships, and much more. A Woman's Wealth, right here on WPFW, every first Wednesday at 3 p.m.
And hello and welcome once again to the quiet, the calm, the cerebral show Dialogue, where we have calm, rational discussions with
Garland Nixon
and Mark Levine.
Hey, and you know, this is the kind of conversation that we've got to have and we've got to continue. So we have an invitation for you all tonight. This is ex officio. It's nothing to do. We're plugged with anybody or anything else. But we're going to go out to Busboys and Poets after the show tonight.
We should 14th and V.
14th and V. We should probably be there by 8:39, somewhere 8:45 probably. So if any of you are in the area and want to come and join in and join us in the discussion
or and meet us in person and,
tell us off, yeah, you know, or just take my side. You know, that would
part
be funny
kind of scares
too.
Me a little bit, you know, Mark.
But you know, we'll stop by there for a bit and hopefully meet some of you and carry on this conversation. Right now, though, it's time for our listeners. 202-588-0893. Nick, you're on at last. Sorry to keep you waiting.
No problem. Mm-hmm. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Mr. Levin, this is about your program last week.
Uh-oh.
Told us was to cower, roll over, and die each time we come in contact with the police. I was so disappointed and shocked that a Harvard-trained lawyer like you say the things you said last week.
Whoa,
hold on a second, Nick.
Don't we have rights?
Nick, you made a statement. Let's let Mark.
Yeah, and you're a little off topic, Nick, but we'll let Mark.
It is off topic. Let me just briefly respond.
So we can get back to what we're talking about.
What I said last week was that I thought that both men were wrong. I thought Sergeant Crowley was way more wrong than Professor Gates. But I said I did advise people, yes, that if you're in a conflict with a police officer, for your own safety,
be courteous.
Then after he's gone, call him on it. Don't play low. Challenge him. To, you know, file a lawsuit. File a complaint. I'm not telling people not to fight back against police officers. I'm saying don't do it at the time. It's just not smart. That's the only argument I was making.
Now let's get back. We don't want to get off topic. We don't want to do 9/11 truth movement. We want
to. Okay, 202-588-0893. Nick, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Stick to the topic. It always helps us move everything along. 202-588-0893. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on the line.
Thank you. Talk to us.
Thank you.
It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you, Gary.
Like this. It's, you know, over the last 40 years, having worked always on the lower rungs of the economic ladder, the biggest hit that I've took has been the price of energy over the years, whether it was the price of gas. You know, it might not seem like much, you know, when it goes up 35 cents, but, you know, back in 74, making $4 an hour, and, you know, just all through the years, and it's, I feel like the oil companies have been in collusion with the car companies in keeping this technology. I mean, there's very simple technology like adiabatics. But if you Google adiabatics, it looks like that it was something written by the petroleum industry, because they talk about pre-detonation. Gas fuel air mixture.
Okay. Before you
just
get into something,
retard the timing, and you know they act like everything's a big technological marvel, and
Gary, where does this
being made to testify in the biblical sense?
Well, Gary, where does this leave you today economically? I mean, where do you put your money, or can you put your money, or do you have any money to put? And where would you if you could? How do you survive or progress?
I would put it in things that are. Like geothermal, you know, like companies that make the stuff for geothermal or that are
With the market being manipulated, as we said, and as Stephen Perlstein pointed out, there's no way you can really know which company would be the best company.
But I would say, I think he is kind of on the right path. I agree with him. You know, the green stuff is really, you know, people are going forward with that. And I think over the next 4 years, the administration is going to be giving some tax breaks and things like that.
I mean, that's what cap and trade is intended to do. Now, I know many people don't think it goes far enough, but it does do something. It's better than the current system, and that's the direction we need to head.
That leads to be, but the long and short of it is this. When we're talking about money and where can you put your money, I think our caller there was Gary.
Gary, right.
I think Gary's kind of hit the nail on the head. If you're going to go somewhere, look towards new industries. And green is a good place to put your money
for
a number of reasons.
Solar, wind, absolutely.
Because
geothermal.
There's going
but to you can't, But you can't as an individual investor. I mean, you really don't want to invest, frankly, in individual stocks. I mean, that's just too risky.
Well, you can buy a mutual fund that invests in green energy.
Yes.
Well, you know, Terry's idea of green energy is BP has a green logo. That's his green. Well, he's an oil tycoon.
Terry so did laugh when you said that. Garland's laughing.
Because he's got about
100,000. Terry just has a straight face.
I just want you to know that wasn't dead air.
Yeah.
I was thinking about do I leap across the table or not?
It was great. Just seeing the expression on your two faces.
That was classic. He's an oil tycoon. We discovered that.
Apparently.
I just want you to. I hope you really admire my restraint, my calm.
Hey, this time he's mad at you, Garland. Usually he's mad at me.
202-588-0893. We're looking for solutions. That's why we have the best listeners in the radio land at all. We're looking for solutions on where do you put your money? How do you do it? How do you hang on?
Or just a way out of this crisis politically. I mean, you know, what do you want to see Congress do?
Yeah, what regulations
would you
like to
see? But how do
you
get Congress to do it, other than what you've said, Mark, which I agree with 100%, is you've got to get rid of campaign financing, you know.
And then again,
and call
what,
them, right?
And then I was going to say, and then what Mark said, you know, somewhere down the line, we do have to look in the mirror. You know, we complain about Congress. We gripe about Congress. But number one, all the congressmen are creeps and they're terrible, except mine.
No, mine's creeping.
You know,
creeping,
you know what I mean? No, yeah. What I'm saying is this. People say all the congressmen are terrible except their own, and they vote the same one over and over. Not saying that theirs are bad. Not saying that they're bad or good. A lot of times they're somewhere in between. But as Mark said, we don't call. We don't send faxes. We don't, you know, harass them in one way or another to get them to do things, and then we get mad because they don't do it. So how many people who would call in today and say, you know, I'm really angry at my congressman because he voted for the Iraq War, sent something in that said, I'm not voting for you if you vote for the Iraq War, or whatever the case may be.
This is what worries me the most, is the lack of participation amongst the voters, and maybe that's part of the topic that we're really talking about.
Yeah, you're right.
Whether it's an economy or anything
else. True for almost every show we do, Terry.
Yeah, it's the lack of participation, and the question is, to me, you know, have we reached that point where people have so lost faith in government, starting by, you know, again, the Reagan, frankly, and the Republicans saying you can't trust government and you don't need government and you don't want government and all that. But have we lost faith in the government to the point that people will not participate? And if so, as many historians and social philosophers have pointed out, that's a real dangerous stage for democracy.
And doesn't that kind of work along with the plan? You know, if you are a big corporation and you're putting money in, and you're the Congress and different people are controlled by the you know, powerful economic forces out here, it kind of works into things perfectly. Mm-hmm. If you get people so frustrated,
if you get apathetic,
they now feel they get apathetic, or they feel powerless. They don't do anything. They just sit back and say, well, there's nothing I can do. It works out perfectly for you. Now you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, right. Jim, join us on the air here. Thanks for calling in. The number again, 202-588-0893. Jim, talk to us. Give us a solution.
How are you?
Fine,
wonderful,
sir.
Jim.
Well,
hi,
fine,
Jim.
Considering. Yeah, if Garland would start
picking
on
me. Good. Come on, let's get to the bottom of this.
Okay.
So the real issue is Wall Street produces what value? They don't produce anything. You know, they produce...
Financing.
Right.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Well, is it? They don't produce anything. We should have a law that says if you don't produce anything, then, you know... It's all fake.
But, well, let's look at Wall Street for what it is, though. You know, we say Wall Street like it's a single entity. It's kind of a hub from one perspective. It's kind of it's a euphemism we use for a hub where all
banks.
These things fly through. So it's not really, we point our finger at Wall Street like it's an individual, it's a single animal. But it is it's almost like what I keep saying, it's almost an environment,
it's
an environment
myth.
That is
it's
allegedly
it's
controlled by the government.
But I would go one
step. Years ago, our country produced a lot of goods, right, and services.
Still does.
So if you don't produce goods and services, you produce toxic assets, what good is that?
Well, there's definitely been a shift.
It's
gambling. No, yeah,
it's what it is. There's a difference. I mean, you produce something to get the money, and then you gamble with it.
Yeah.
And some gamblers make a lot of money, and most don't.
That's right.
But the real point, and again, it was made in one of the articles I've recently read, and I think you would agree with this, Jim, as well, is that what we've done, I mean, we really do have to, with respect and with law and with, you know, all of the rights and with innocent until proven guilty, but we really have to start naming people, because this is
I'll start with Goldman Sachs.
Yeah,
you want to name names, I'll start with them.
But, I mean, not just a company, but who in the company, who are these people getting these bonuses? Some 7,000 bonuses given out in the last few months. Over $1 million, some 7,000. Who are these people? Because
are
the ones that are criminals.
But I think we've seen.
Agree that they're criminals.
Well, as Garland pointed out, they're legal
not.
Thieves.
They're
not breaking the law, but we need better laws so they would
right,
be breaking
precisely.
The law.
Right, precisely. We need to push Congress and we need to push our government into making it so they would be criminals
unless,
for doing what they
want.
Unless
their government will do that.
Let me say this.
I actually,
this may sound extreme. I'm actually okay with bonuses in limited circumstances.
Right.
If someone is actually making, as Jim says, I'm actually making something, you're making a better product. You know, whoever invented the iPod deserves a bonus.
Right.
All
right.
I'm okay with that.
I agree with that.
It's not the bonuses are the problem. The problem is we're awarding bonuses for people who are driving their companies into the dirt. That's why.
Right. And we're providing.
Honestly, if we just gave shareholders the power to control the corporations that they supposedly owned, that would fix a lot of problems.
Very, very good
it
point.
Would. All right. Very Jim, thank you so much for calling in. We really do appreciate it.
All right.
Okay. Sarah's coming up here next, 202-588-0893, and hopefully Sarah has a whole lot of answers for us on where she'd put her money, what she would do, how she would change the whole darn thing.
Talk
here
to Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Sarah.
Hello.
Yes, hello, Sarah. You're on.
Yeah, good afternoon. I think we have to look at the real story. The real story is that after 8 years of neocons governing this country, we have so much corruption that needs to be cleaned up. And President Obama is like a breath of fresh air. And we have to get involved. I mean, he cannot do this. All these powers, unknown powers, are going to manipulate him. I just heard today that he is getting like 30 life threats each day. Guess who is making these life threats? I don't believe this is because he's black. The problem is not black. The problem is that he's trying to bring the change in this country. Unfortunately, he can't, because we thought by electing Obama, everything is going to be done. But that's not the case. So we have to get involved. And people like Madoff or those
team
that was exposed in New Jersey and New York, like
right.
several rabbis were part of it. Why we cannot go to the bottom of it? We need to find out who are these people who are stopping further investigation, because there is a lot of hands in this. And guess what? They are part of these secret societies that they are trying to take over and rule this country and the world, and part of it is all these fights and wars that are going around because many of them are owning these armed companies. And
let me ask you just to think about this, Sarah, and we really appreciate your calling, and you've got a lot of good ideas there. I'm not one who accepts conspiracy theories, but I do understand common self-interest. And I do understand corporations and people
right.
who are working together and are even colluding together because that is in their common self-interest. And frankly, that's all you need for a lot of destruction. You don't need a conspiracy.
You're
you don't,
right.
You don't need skull and bones and all that. You just need a whole lot of bankers having lunch saying, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we do the super fast stock manipulation?
Right, right, right.
You know, and that's the real problem. And that's where you need, again, the regulation. And
absolutely. I really think regulation can solve a lot of these
yeah.
things. And the irony is that shareholders, who you would think would be people who are, I don't know, maybe some Republicans. I mean, you know,
right.
people who have wealth,
mm-hmm.
you would think they'd want control of their own money. It's an amazing thing when you think about all these rich people who have all this stock saying, I don't want to control the corporations that steal money from me. Why don't you?
Right. Well, yeah.
If you're not profiting from that theft, why don't you? And frankly, I'd like to reach across the aisle to all Americans of any political background and say, you know, what is the free market economy? Let the shareholders, they tell you in the textbooks they own the corporations,
right.
let them exercise that right. Let them say, I'm sorry, CEO, you're not getting more than $500,000. That's enough.
Well, you know, I mean, Garland and Mark have picked on me ruthlessly for, you know, because of my two shares in Exxon. I mean,
you still own them, Terry?
Yes, I do.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's a powerless feeling, frankly, because, you know, you get these stupid proxies in to vote for, you know.
Just vote no.
Yeah,
I'll tell you this.
I do. I always do. I always vote no.
I always vote no on everything management wants. I do. I'm a shareholder in
Exxon, too?
I don't own Exxon. I don't own Exxon. I don't own a single
Halliburton.
Oil company.
Halliburton.
I don't own a single oil company, though I admit I do sometimes buy, like, the whole Dow or the whole whole S&P, which probably includes some more.
Okay, we got a couple of callers who are investing in the show.
But I always vote no. Let me advise everybody. Whenever you get one of those proxy votes,
vote no.
I vote no on all the people on the board of directors.
You're right.
Withhold all nominees, and then I look at everything the management wants, and I vote no because they're all trying to rob the corporations.
Right.
I look at everything the shareholders want, and I usually vote yes on all of those unless they're really crazy.
Yeah. And so
just
far,
just do that consistently. You don't even have to read the thing. Just vote no to all directors, yes to all shareholder ideas,
no
to everything the management wants, and if there is a real chance to change it, you've made a part.
But yeah. Let's get on to our callers.
It'll look good when it goes in the shredder.
Right. Joe, this is Terry and Mark and Garland. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
Good. What are we going to do?
I'm thinking biotech is a pretty good area to invest in.
I'm with you.
Discovering lots of new things about how the body works and how cells work at a mechanical level, and I think that it's a huge growth area for the next 20, 40, 80 years.
So you would advise a friend or a neighbor or a parent, even in this economic climate, and even knowing that the stock market is being speculatively manipulated to the point that Steve Perlston points out, that you would advise them to go ahead and invest in the stock market?
Yeah, I think you have to, if you've got anything that you can invest, I think that it's important to, you know, sort of put your money in a place where you think that you've got some opportunity for growth in the future, and I think that's one area. I'll speak slightly in defense of Wall Street and say that I've got a brother that works for an investment firm, and I was kind of sad. He's a very technically savvy biologist, and I thought that he was going to help, you know, find a cure for cancer or something like that. And he said, you know, I'm going to do the world a better service by working at Wall Street, because I'm going to be able to direct the funds to the companies that deserve it, that are doing the best science. And in doing so, I'm going to have a greater impact than if I was an individual scientist.
That's interesting you should mention that. When I was teaching at American University, I had a debate with two students, one student who was going to be an activist, one student who literally was, these were seniors, one was going to go on into business because he felt by being in business he could do more good for the world than the activist who felt by being active in the streets and in social causes. It's an interesting dilemma. It truly is.
I don't know your brother. I'm not going to attack your brother, but I will say this. If your brother is being completely forthright with you, and he may well be, he's a very rare bird on Wall Street.
Yeah, he really is.
And you know, the question, you get in there, and in order to play the game a lot of times, in order to survive in there, there's, you know, either you're going to go along with the game plan or you're going to get...
It's about making money. Well, that's the goal. That's how you play the game.
That's really part of it. That's really part of it that's a big problem. If you've ever been to the floor of the commodities market or the stock market or everything else, I mean, it frankly, you know, to participate in it is a high. I mean, it is so intense.
I like games. It's fun to play. It's
so
fun to win.
And
they measure the win through dollar signs.
That's right. And it's a big game. And it's energetic. It's invigorating. It's stimulating. And that is part of the problem. I mean, it is very, very challenging and very exciting to be on the floor of the commodities market or the stock exchange.
And I just don't think many people are saying, well, we'll put the money in here because it's best for science. I respect this man's brother. I don't know him. But I just don't think there are many of those people.
The other thing about investing in geothermal or green energy or things like that is this. Two things. Number one, you're investing in the future, but you're actually pumping money into an industry. You're giving this industry more money to go out and do their research and develop and things of that. So when you buy stock in green energy, you know, research, of course, your company, but in good companies, you're actually helping. Well, you're doing the opposite of Terry. You're actually fighting against climate change while he is throwing unthinkable carcinogenic. Terry, never mind. Back to the callers.
You shouldn't have admitted it, Terry.
I feel so alone.
I mean, dirty secret.
I'm on the air. You know, here I am with two friends and wonderful listeners all over the place and tea in the booth, and I just feel so alone. It's tough. All right. Nana, you're on.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I would rather buy a lottery ticket than buy a stock.
Good man.
Because
you're screwed there.
No. When I buy a lottery ticket in the state of Maryland, I know that I probably won't win, but the money is going to pay for something that the state does.
That's true.
I would advise everybody to take that first thing, take the money out of the banks and join a credit union.
That's very good advice.
I did that years ago. I get better rates on loans and everything.
Good advice.
It's a more friendly process. It's controlled by the members. We get to elect who runs it. It's not somebody 2,000 miles away.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, it is. Skyscraper. setting the policy for what happens in my neighborhood.
That's very good advice.
They offer all the same products that banks do: Visa check cards, ATM, credit cards, mortgage loans, the whole nine yards, car loans.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right.
Have the best of credit, they work with you.
Because what you're saying, Nana, which is so important, is these are collectives and they do work together. And I mean, that's another reason to be, you know, part of pro union and everything else. Unions offer great credit unions. Some professions do. Anytime you can get in a credit union through a friend, through a relative, it's going to serve you better than going into a bank. Interestingly, and I want to just add this, we're going to get one more caller in here, maybe two, we'll see. But when I was living in New York, the New York Daily News, for a number of years back when they had money were a real newspaper, they would have a contest every single year, and they would give $10,000 to three specific people, one to play the horses, one to play the commodities, one to play the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
And the horses did best?
Every single time. So and the funny thing is, if you think about it, you know, it's the same process in commodities or stock market or anything else. You're supposed to research the company and everything else. But in the horse racing, you're researching
the horses.
You're researching a horse. You're researching the track. You're researching a particular jockey. Yep. You can get better information. The horses won every time. So I don't know about the lottery, but the horses could be. All right, Charles, you're next. Welcome to Dialogue.
Hey, listen, great show.
Thank you.
At work, actually, so I got to rush this. That gentleman just called, took half of my thunder, so I want to say also the same thing he said.
Okay.
In fact, I think it should be a push by consumers to be a little bit more loyal. I mean, I have a credit union, and I'm still a member of it. It's an oil, a Shell Oil, when I was working for Pennzoil in Houston. But it doesn't give you somewhat the same rates as far as, you know, your fixed. Well, now all the banks are not doing fixed anymore anyway.
Right,
so,
right.
But that's a good idea. It's an excellent idea, and I agree with 100%. My point for the other side of it is the solar industry. You know, when I was living in California back in the early 80s, it was a big push for solar. I think Ronald Reagan was president then. And a lot of it got killed. I don't know why, because I was working for a part-time for a company that was putting panels on the rooftop in L.A., that's something that I wish you guys would try to expand on, and because I think it was a problem as far as cost. It was a cost factor as far as those panels, as to why we now don't have as much solar in homes and so forth. But we need to get a little bit more as far as the green side of the, you know, actually being green is the term. Solar should be a little bit more innovative. We should really start putting more funds into innovative ways to make solar energy cheaper, so we can get away from this large conglomerate.
Yeah, and do you know who's building the largest solar farms in the world?
One of the oil companies.
Dubai.
Dubai.
They got a lot of sun.
Really?
But you know,
really?
we have a lot of sun too.
Right.
It amazes me. We got
they
all this
understand.
Desert land in Arizona and Nevada.
Yeah.
I mean, vast deserts where there's nothing but, you know, baking sun
and
California.
And I may have pointed out to you, I pointed out before in the show, the largest owner of that land out there right now
is the federal government.
No, is Goldman Sachs.
No way.
Well, we
yes.
need to talk to our politicians and get them off the stop fighting each other. Let's do something. Let's do something to stop.
Well, that's honestly part of what cap and trade does. Is if you tax carbon, it makes things like solar and wind energy a lot cheaper. I just did a show yesterday, and in fact, you can find it radioinsidescoop.com.
Oh,
I did a TV
shameless
show.
Plug.
No, it's a shameless plug, but it's a really good show that you should watch. Where we talked about the cap and trade bill. We talked about how solar energy exactly. You know, we, for example, all our troops in Iraq. These were two veterans on my show, and they were talking about the fact that bringing in water and bringing in fuel is what 70% of everybody's work was. And if we had solar-powered everything, even tanks, you think the military would be doing
wars
this,
would be cheaper. You know? We could kill millions of people. It wouldn't cost a dime.
Budget. That's Garland's positive thinking right there.
Kill them, mow them down by the millions.
But the point is that we could have cars, just regular cars, run on solar energy, which is, you know, use the heat we have in this global warming.
This is important because
what little time we have left to use it.
Yeah, right. What is it, a week now? Yeah. But anyway, when is the Stockholm conference coming up?
It's Copenhagen. You're talking
Copenhagen.
About, right?
Is it Copenhagen?
Stockholm
December.
Syndrome.
Yeah,
that's
Stockholm
what
Syndrome.
Thinking.
Yeah,
December.
December. I mean, you know, that's something to lobby for right now, because if we don't make some progress at that conference, I mean, that is going to be crucial in terms of global warming, in terms of green energy development. And what the world is seeing right now is the United States is lagging like crazy in any kind of real effort. And as long as the United States lags, eggs. Nobody else is going to invest.
You know, I believe in good old American ingenuity. I think we can design a better solar battery, a better wind, everything.
Of course we can.
We've done it before. We led the world, you know, with cars in the first place and railroads.
No, gee, that worked out well.
Tom Edison and electric lights and everything.
And we had fins and all that stuff in cars. It was beautiful. You know,
but in a few moments, guys, we're going to be where? Another half hour or so, yep, we're going to be at Busboys and Poets.
We're going to be at Busboys and Poets.
Hey, join us. You want to meet us? You want to argue with us?
But how are they going to know who we are? Well, one of us actually has this PFW clip that he's going to wear.
We'll put a sign or something
there. And
you see three contentious people arguing.
One of us is older and sophisticated, so that'll be a clear clue.
I'm the young guy in shorts and a T-shirt. You'll find us.
Yeah, we hope you join us there. We appreciate your joining us here on air. It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always. I am Terry D. Kester, and you can reach me through WPFW.org. It's the best and most direct way. Garland?
Just go to garlandin@gmail.com or Facebook me at Garland Nixon, and I'll have my info for my TV show next week.
Oh, you can Facebook me too, but I don't love Facebook. Anyway,
Garland
Mark
Nixon.
Levine, you can find me at WPFW.org. You can find me on Facebook. You can also find me at RadioInsightsGroup.com.
Or you can meet us at Busboys and Poets tonight, and that's not a plug for them. That's a plug for WPFW. And next on WPFW is Brother Ah with the Jazz Collection. Enjoy. We'll be back with you next week.
A conversation in which we all get a chance to speak, to listen, to be heard, and to collaborate to solve our problems.